Hey, friend, today on Proof to Product, we are digging into the financial side of running a creative product business. And I've invited someone that I deeply trust with both my personal and business finances. It's Mary Beth Storjahan from Allura Wealth. Mary Beth and I have worked together since 2016, and she has guided my husband and I through everything from financial planning for the family to long-term business strategy. She's one of the few financial planners and advisors who really understands how intertwined your life and your business become when you are a small business owner. Now, her approach to, quote, whole life wealth is exactly what so many founders need. It's a practical framework for building stability today while also setting yourself up for future security. So now in this conversation, we're going to get into real actionable steps that you should be taking before the end of the year. So these are things that can save you money come tax time and also support your long-term financial health. We will talk about blind spots that she sees most often with creative entrepreneurs and why getting clear on your enough number can change how you plan and make decisions. Now, if you want to finish the year on solid financial footing and also set yourself up for success in the future, this episode is going to be incredibly useful for you. Now, before we get into today's conversation, if you are serious about growing your product-based business, you need to be inside of Proof to Product Labs. Labs is where creative product brands go for coaching and strategies, community and accountability that actually move the needle. So we're talking stronger sales, better systems, smarter marketing, and a clearer plan for profit. If you're ready to stop guessing and start really growing with proven guidance, then come join us in Proof to Product Labs at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. Let's get into it. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Mary Beth, welcome back to Proof to Product. It's so great to have you back.
It's great to be here, Katie. Thank you for having me.
Of course, it is always a treat to talk to you, and I appreciate you making time to sit down with me today. I know that it's been a minute since you've been on the podcast. You and I talk pretty regularly on our own, but it's been a minute since we've had this public conversation. I think it's been 5 years.
Has it really?
Yeah, I think it's been five.
Who are you talking about money with? What? Who are you cheating on me with? No, I'm just kidding.
Clearly, I'm not talking about money enough on this show. I need to have you back more regularly. Although you did, I will, in my defense, you did do a really cool sprint for our Labs members where we talked about getting financially organized, and that was really awesome. So if you're a Labs member and you haven't gone through that yet, you should totally go through Mary.
All right, it's not been 5 years. And yeah, we had a little, that was like 18 months ago, right. Maybe. We're good.
I'm not cheating on you, I promise. Okay. Oh, gosh. Okay. But go ahead and remind our listeners who you are, who you help, and really how you help people with their finances.
Sure. So my name is Mary Beth Storjahan. I'm a certified financial planner. I have been in the industry for about 20 years, and I specialize in working with type A, overachieving, breadwinning, business owning women to organize their finances. Does it sound like anybody we know?
I'm raising my hand over here.
So it's like all the listeners to organize their finances and really to allow yourselves not only to be organized and fulfilled in your personal and financial lives, but to give yourselves a little bit of permission, get rid of some of that shame and confusion around your money. And I work as an accountability partner, cheerleader, and just this financial kind of consultant along the way.
Yeah. So for folks listening, Mary Beth and I have worked together since 2016. She helps Patrick and I with both our personal finances and family details that we're working out, planning for that, and then also helping me with financial planning for the business. So she and I go way back, and I can vouch that she's incredible. So I will also say too, having somebody that understands our personal goals as well as the business goals has been very beneficial because they're so intertwined as a small business owner.
Yes. Yes. It's so funny. I think we've talked about this in the past. I fell into working with small business owners when I was a small business owner. I became a small business owner, had to organize all of my own financials, began experiencing life of how it's all intertwined, what I needed to look at for my family. And then it became one of my favorite niches to work
with. Yeah, I know. Well, I love having you as part of my team. So thank you for that.
Of being a part of your team.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I did ask you here today to join me because one, you're a fantastic resource, but also I wanted to specifically talk about the things that small business owners should be thinking about as we approach the end of the calendar year. But before we kind of jump into that like punch list of things they should think about, kind of talk to me about your whole life wealth approach that you talk about on your website and why is it so important, particularly for smaller brands, to like think about money in this holistic sort of way?
I mean, money is such a tough topic, but it really touches every aspect of our lives. Yeah. And so when you think about whole life wealth, it's not just, hey, are your books in order? Are you setting aside money for retirement? It's what do you want your life to look like today? What's holding you back? What are your money scripts? What are the things that your maybe like your innate kind of tendencies that are keeping you stuck in the same place? And so we talk about this whole life wealth. It's not just all of these areas of financial planning, like holistic in terms of insurance, taxes, investments, estate planning, business-wise, all of this the same thing. Your profit and loss, your insurance. If something happens to you, what happens to your business?
Yeah.
So as business owners, you almost have two layers of the financial planning kind of concerns. And then holistically, though, they have to fit together to get you to live your most fulfilled life, right? And your life isn't going to look like somebody else's, no matter what Instagram says or TikTok. But yes, that whole life aspect is really about doing the work to understand, hey, what's important to you in your life, your family, your needs, your business, and then making sure your business and personal finances align to get you in that direction. Yeah. So not just this like I'm retired at 65 thing, but what does it look like today to give yourself that permission or tomorrow?
And how do I leverage my business now to let me live a good life now, whether that's travel or...
Yes. I love that you said the word leverage, right? Because I think there's so many opportunities as business owners from cash flow, tax planning, retirement savings. I know we've talked about like, do you hire children in the business? There's so many opportunities that you can use to not only save money, but to invest money, to grow your wealth. And enjoy yourself. And it might be scaling up, scaling down, hiring, doubling down in certain areas. But your business as a small business owner, it can be a really phenomenal resource for you from a wealth creation standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too, one of the things you've taught me is the balance of how the business is there to help us live our best lives, but also then striking the right balance too between growing personal wealth and then also setting the business up for stability. So talk about that a little bit too. Like you're big on, okay, let's shore up the business. Let's make sure we've got the cash cushion, all these things, but also let's pull money from the business to go live life, which is kind of what you've been saying all along, but.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so when I build a financial plan for small business owners, and it might be like a single individual, it could be a couple with a small business and a full-time kind of salary job, or it could just be the couple owns the business. But when we're building a financial plan, it starts with one of the questions, I know I've talked about this in the past, is if we were speaking 3 years from today, what would have had to happen personally, professionally, and financially in order for you to be happy? And you notice as you talk about this personal aspects and you talk about the professional aspects, a lot of that is tied to money, right? There's still going to be a dollar amount that may or may not be tied to that. And so what you want to do with a business, like the idea of shoring it up is making sure, okay, hey, do I have these cushions? And then we plan for conservatively, okay, what can you reasonably pay yourself today? That's what we know is happening for the next 12 to 24 months. But we're going to talk about, is your goal to grow your business? Typically it is, right? So some people want to stay steady, but I'm guessing your listeners are looking to grow. So if your goal is to grow your business, like how do we begin to increase your income to yourself? How do we plan for the business to say, okay, now you're going to give yourself a 20% raise, whether it's through salary or distributions, we talk about what that looks like. And then you begin to leverage, okay, put that into your travel accounts, maybe put that into your solo 401k, maybe you're saving for kids' college, maybe you're buying yourself that new car you want. But when you look at the business and you plan, there's the immediate, we talk about like this 1 year planning period, right? You're going to do your planning now for 2026. But what you want to do is look at that 3 to 5 year projection of like, where do you think things can go? Because that's what you're aiming for. So you can begin to pay yourself more. And that ties into your personal goals, like your business growth, your ability to earn an income is going to be the thing that carries you forward. And there's so many ways and opportunities to look at the numbers that I nerd out on. But that I think it's just underutilized in terms of people are so in it from the day-to-day aspect. And you might set an income goal for yourself this year, but I don't know how many people are doing that 3 to 5 year planning projections of like, what can this look like over the long run? And then the other thing that I know you and I have talked about, and like I've talked with other business owners about, just in general, it's interesting of what do you want for your business? Like, are you in it for the long game? Are you working doing this until you retire and then it all disappears? Or are you looking to try to build something that you could potentially sell as an asset one day? And that's maybe a cash influx for your quote unquote retirement income. But there's just so many ways when you're looking at the business to leverage it. And I think this whole life aspect though is the business is there. We are all driven by impact. We're all looking to create something and build something, but the business is there. Your ability to earn an income is there typically for you to live your best life personally.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I know we all get really wrapped up in our businesses, like preaching to the choir over here, but it is, I think this permission we talk about is like, okay, this is the business. Like, you can take more out of it now and you can hire help at home or you can take that family trip. And so some people just, you don't know when to call it. If you're just looking at it, you're constantly kind of contingency planning. And the fun part about working with like a planner or somebody else to advise you and create that plan around it is that it gives yourself permission and it creates that structure. So you can actually see, oh, holy crap, I have this much money I can use. Yeah. Or, and then you start to dream about your life a little differently.
Yeah. When things are shored up and you have that like emergency account filled up on the business side and the personal side, it just allows you to live a little bit differently, to dream a little bit bigger, to think about things a little bit different.
Yep.
What do you think the biggest financial blind spot is for small business owners or creative people in general?
So there's the day-to-day aspect of money that I think a lot of small business owners do not enjoy, which you're not supposed to necessarily enjoy it. Like, you're a creative, right? Nobody's wanting to look at the numbers on an ongoing basis, but I always say you're not a nonprofit and the goal is for you to make money. So there's, I think, the blind spot. It's just hard on it across the board. I've met very few small business owners who love the numbers. So I would say that's just like a tough spot. The blind spot, I think, is typically actually the retirement savings, like tax advantage retirement contributions. So like, just in terms of, I'm a business owner, a lot of small businesses, they might just be doing like a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. And so for example, for 2025, you could put $7,000 into one of those options. But then I think a lot of people are missing out on the opportunity of a solo 401k. You can put in from an employee contribution. You can actually put up to like over $70,000 into a solo 401k, depending on how much you're making in your business, or a SEP IRA. And I think the tax planning strategies that are available as a business owner are one of the really big blind spots. Like, I'm not a CPA. I work with a lot of CPAs. So you'd always want to work with an accountant. But that's the thing that I see. The blind spot is typically what actual opportunities are there from a tax planning perspective. So even in California, once they got away with, you know, they put the limit on itemized deductions, right, for the SALT cap. There's ways to go around that now as a small business owner and how you pay your taxes. And I think that's, for me, I think people just don't know what they don't know. And yeah, taxes are just this area that's typically scary. And they're like, take my money and just don't come audit me.
That's, yeah,
like, just, yeah. And if I'm even able to pay on time. But I think from like this retirement savings tax planning, that is honestly what I think is like one of the bigger blind spots that I see across the board. That it's always fun for me because I'm like, oh, look at this blank slate. It's typically a blank slate, or I'm refining. I have two new clients now where I'm like, and we have let's open a solo 401k and we're going to move this money. And it's so fun because it's just like such a, you know, it's a little maybe, once you get it set up, it's a pain in the butt paperwork maybe, but it's just such a clean sweep and way to save yourself some money from taxes and set yourself up for long-term savings. I'm obviously geeking out and getting excited.
No, here, but I'm that, excited I'd say, too, because what you're doing, and you know, as you're doing this for your clients, that you are saving them money, they're making smart money decisions. Like, that's got to feel really good knowing that that impact is there.
Right. I think people just don't think about it necessarily. So I have some new clients that came on, business owners, and they were just putting money into an IRA every year. And I was like, whoa, like, we're just missing you. And the reason it's a blind spot is not just like this year-to-year basis, but if you do that for too many years, it is not enough for your future. Like, it's very typically like, just unfortunately, where we are as a society and an economy, $7,000, I mean,
it's not going to compound to millions at this
rate. Not going to compound as quickly maybe as if you're looking for, depending on, we talked about like the enough number.
Right.
We'll talk about that, but it's not there. You typically need to do more.
Yeah.
Sorry if that you hear that and that makes you nervous.
No, I think it's real talk though, right? Mm-hmm. And I think too, I mean, I worked in corporate for like 12 years. And so I was conditioned. I worked in a law firm. So very, very corporate. And so I was conditioned, put my money in my 401k, max out the matching, all of these things. And I remember going out on my own and not really, like, I just didn't think about it. I did not think about the fact that, like, oh, I should probably set something like this up. Now, in the early years of owning my own business, I didn't have enough cash flow to actually start doing that. But right, once, yeah, I did have more stability with our cash flow, and that's when I started working with you, we were able to get creative. I mean, friends, this sounds so weird, but like, I'm always like, Mary Beth, what are the top 1% doing? I'm not anywhere near the top 1%, but what are they doing? Like, what ideas can we transfer down to my like peon numbers? You know, like
my favorite Katie question.
I know. I'm like, what's new with the top 1%? What can we steal from them? But not steal, but you know what I mean? What ideas can we pull? But
borrow, share.
Yes,
share.
Exactly. But I know our listeners are probably like, gosh, I haven't thought about it either, because it's, again, going back to what you said, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of in that same vein, then, I would love to talk to you about like what strategic things small businesses should be doing or could be thinking about, maybe if they're not ready to do it quite yet, before the end of the year. So like more specifically, like, are there things that we can do now that will benefit our future selves? What are they?
So in general, I mean, if you have not been reviewing your books, get them clean. Get them clean and make sure you're looking at them before the end of the year, right? Because if your books are clean, you should be able to have better knowledge of what's happening with your taxes. That's where the bookkeeping comes in. So I think bookkeeping, make sure your books are clean, make sure you understand how much income you've brought in. And then from there, set aside for tax savings. Like, don't wait until April for some surprise cash payment. I think that's just like, make sure that you're planning. You should be planning now for whatever taxes you have due next year. And ideally, as a creative, you're making quarterly estimates and you're hopefully on track. But if you're not, let me just usually have to say that as a PSA, depending on where people are across the spectrum. Now is when you want to review your business entity structure, right? So should you be doing an S corp? Does it make sense, right? Especially, you typically want to establish your solo 401k by October, November, so that you can get your employee funding matching in there. Mm-hmm. But should you establish a solo 401k, you're looking now for what's my payroll going to look like next year. So if you're on payroll, are you giving yourself a bump? Are you keeping it the same? Like, you should be looking at your cash flow and understanding, again, the P&L will tell you what it looks like. And then preparing, making sure that you're able to top off your retirement contributions is a big one. So making sure if you're an employee contribution, it's 23.5 for...
That's the max for 2025.
2025. If you're able to do like a backdoor Roth IRA is a great strategy, whether you're a business owner or not. If you do not have any funds in an existing traditional IRA and you are phased out of contributing directly to a Roth IRA because of your income level, there's a great strategy called a backdoor Roth IRA, which allows you to make a non-deductible contribution to your traditional IRA and then
roll it over,
convert it over there to your Roth. Like, these are the kind of the, Katie was asking, like, what are the 1% do? Like, what are the wealth building strategies? These are some of them, right? In terms of just being prepared. And then you should be doing your planning for 2026 should be coming through like November, December, right? Especially from a financial perspective. A lot of us like to do our planning. Katie and I have talked about this. February is the start of the new year.
It keeps getting later every year, which is not good.
It was like March, depending. 2020 was like the whole year was gone. But you want to ideally do some financial planning now for next year in terms of business projections. It's better to think about it because, again, you're going into like, what's my salary? What can I pay myself? Like, can I make some new hires? What do I need my business goals to be? So, and you can do this a couple of ways. You can either say, hey, here's what I need to make. Here's what I want to hire in the business. Therefore, this is how much I need to make in my business and what I need to gross. Or you can say, okay, well, here's what happened this year. Bump it up, maybe up or down, whatever you think is going to happen next year. And then you plan for your expenses from there. I mean, those are probably some of the big ones. Reviewing your insurance and legal cleanup are really big as well. But I'd say, like, again, the bigger opportunities come from like the tax planning. It all goes back to understanding your numbers. And it is, your team should be, have a bookkeeper, have an accountant, and potentially have a financial planner if you're at that space in your life and you feel like it. But you should definitely, if your books are not clean, hire a bookkeeper who's going to do it for you to keep them clean, because it's just not somewhere, if you're not spending the time there, I think that's like one of the first investments that I see.
Same.
And it's just messy. So, but even if you do have a bookkeeper, you still have to review the reports. So make sure that you're looking at them.
Yes. Okay. I want to push pause real quick on this because I want to define for folks that are not familiar, the difference between a bookkeeper, a financial planner, and a CPA, real quick. I know this is pretty like 101, but there's a lot of confusion around this sometimes with people. So your bookkeeper is the one that is actually in your books, ideally monthly, reconciling things, labeling income as certain categories, marking your expenses in certain categories. They're giving you a monthly report of your profit and loss statement showing exactly what's coming in, exactly what's going out, and you can see in detail where it all went. So you can see which revenue streams are most profitable. You can see where you're spending the most money, and you can make informed, educated decisions based on that data. So I agree with Mary Beth. Hiring a bookkeeper is like one of the top things you need to do like when you start your business. And I know a lot of people like to do it themselves, but frankly, it falls to the wayside for most entrepreneurs that do it themselves. And then they get caught at this time of year or even like January, February before tax season, trying to go back and figure it all out. And it's just so much.
Nobody has time for that. No. Like you don't actually have the time for it. So just inch your goal up a little bit for your income and outsource that.
Yeah. One extra wholesale order a month will pay for your bookkeeper. Okay. Explain the difference between what the CPA does versus what you as a financial planner does.
So there's CPAs and there's accountants. They're not necessarily the same thing, but they both can do your taxes. So the CPA has like gotten a designation, done some testing. They're a little bit more advanced than your traditional accountant. The CPA is somebody who's going to help you do tax strategy potentially, and they're going to file your taxes and help you with quarterly tax payments. So they're somebody like every year they're going to help you. Like you're going to get them their whole list of documents once a year. They're going to run projections for you, tell you what to set aside on a quarterly basis, and then you're going to email them with tax questions as necessary. A CPA, for example, the difference between a CPA or accountant and a financial planner is the CPA, you're going to ask your CPA like, oh, well, how do I not pay this much in taxes next year? And they're going to say, oh, well, you could open a solo 401k, you could fund an IRA, and they're going to be like, great, how? So you can either choose to try and do it on your own, or you can choose to work with a financial planner who's going to help you to open those accounts and then some by looking at more of your life. And so the financial planner is somebody who's looking comprehensively at your money. So as I was mentioning those topics before, like we're looking at your cash flow, we're looking at your personal and professional life goals, we're looking at your insurance, everything from life insurance, disability is a big one for entrepreneurs and small business owners, to like your home and car insurance. We're looking at your investments, retirement, all of that. So a financial planner is looking at all of those things, and I'll look at the taxes and I'll say, hey, here's what I think you need to do. Like, and here's what, maybe we need to adjust your salary because you're not paying yourself enough, or maybe we need to put more into a solo 401k or take advantage of this. Like, let's check in with your CPA to confirm. And so then we'll, like the financial planner, we'll email the CPA and the client to make sure, hey, we're all on the same page. So that financial planner typically holds like the big picture, and we'll reach out to those other ones as necessary.
Yeah. It's very collaborative. Very collaborative.
Yeah, it's very collaborative. It's a big, robust team. So it depends on the size of your business and where you're at. But I think it's really important in those areas of like bookkeeping, accountant, CPA, and then
financial planner if you're ready for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can do some of these things Mary Beth's talking about on your own too. So don't feel like we're telling you have to go hire somebody, but it is a lot easier because they're knowledgeable and they know what's going on and they can do it. They live and breathe this day in and day out. So they're good at what they do. Okay. So going back to end of year punch list, it's basically getting your books in order, thinking about retirement opportunities and where you can shore up some cash there, potentially for tax savings, looking at business structure to make sure that it's still whatever you're at right now is still the right mode of operating for you. Did I miss one in there?
No, we talked about just like planning for new hires and like income adjustments. Oh, so that all goes back to your P&L. You know, end of year planning, we talked about like, oh, having that shored up emergency fund, right? Or having that, setting some targets for yourself, right? You need to. So if you don't have targets for yourself, you don't know, or you're just stashing it aside, like you either could be sitting on too little cash or too much cash. Mm-hmm. And so if this is a great time again to look back at if your business will kind of rinse and repeat for next year and you know you're busy, you know which seasons require cash influx or outflow. Plan around that and make sure that you are planning now for how much cash you need to have on hand. Because what I also see is sometimes a lot goes on the credit card and then they're waiting for sales to pay things off. And so being able to plan in advance and have some goals around how much cash you should be sitting on and planning for different investments is important as well.
For sure.
I mean, it's hard because like, as creatives, like you just want to create, but the income is it's more volatile, right? It's just, it fluctuates. And so it does require more financial planning, which is the thing that many people don't want to do, but it's just, you have to, when you don't get a steady paycheck, right? Or your income is like just in swings. Ideally, we have to plan for like a more conservative number that's coming from the business into your personal cash flow.
Yeah.
And then you can take larger distributions every quarter.
So a lot of our folks listening right now definitely feel that pain point that you're talking about, like especially if they're selling to like big box stores, they're having to front the cash to run the product to send to the store, and then they're not getting paid out until like 60 days after it arrives and stuff. Like they're having to float a lot of cash in there. What are your thoughts on, generally speaking, about like lines of credit for the business or leveraging debt in different ways? Do you think people can do that responsibly? I mean, I know people can do it responsibly, but do you recommend that as those as options?
I recommend it if you can do it responsibly. I do think they're a great tool if you are somebody who is actually paying attention to the numbers and it's not, and you have to have a lot of clarity of, okay, like what's that going to look like? And having, you have to do a little bit more planning around like this good better best, right? Like depending on like, what are you putting on the credit, line of credit, and then how quickly will you be able to pay it off?
Yeah.
There's more planning, I think, and nuance involved when you do use those tools, but I think they're great tools if they can be leveraged appropriately. When they're not is when somebody's using them as like a band-aid of sorts, and you're still, if you're not sure what's happening with your numbers and you haven't made projections for what you think is going to come in and you don't know how you're going to pay it off, you don't have a plan around it, not great. Like, don't do it.
Yeah.
So, but if you're going to do it and then have a clear structure around it, I do think they can be a great tool for times like this.
Yeah. So I was talking to some of my clients in our programming and they weren't familiar with a line of credit for the business. And I was surprised by that because, so explain what a line of credit is and how it differs from like putting things down on a credit card. As an example.
Yeah. So a credit card is from like, you know, just
standard credit card,
whatever. Yeah. You're paying, you know, 24, you're paying a ridiculous percent APR, right? On the credit card there. A line of credit is an actual, it's like a loan straight, like just like a fixed loan that you can tap into. It's not like a HELOC per se, because the HELOC is tied against your home, but a business line of credit typically has a much lower rate. You can get it for a fixed amount and it's a line that you can tap into and out of over time. You can write checks out of it, etc. So a line of credit is a great tool for you to use.
My favorite thing about the line of credit, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you can tap into it when you need it. You can pay that down and then you can, like, you're only paying on the money you borrow out of it. So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's great.
You're not taking out a loan for hypothetically $100,000 and paying for the whole $100,000. If you have a $100,000 line of credit and you use maybe $10,000 of it, you're only paying interest on that $10,000 until you pay
100%. Yep, 100%. I don't like it as the emergency cushion, right? But I like it as a backup. Like if you have your emergency cushion and you have like the line of credit, I think it's a great option, especially but if you have your emergency cushion and then, hey, I use my line of credit for like these big inventory, what I know I'm going to pay it off. It's fantastic. And you only, it's like you pay on what you use. So even though you have 100,000, like you said, you use 10, 15 of it, you're paying interest on 10 to 15 of it. You're paying it back either, you know, whatever it is, it's a fixed payment rate too.
Yeah.
It's a fixed interest.
Which is nice. But again, responsibly using it is key.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. We mentioned your Enough number earlier. We talked kind of loosely about like knowing your Enough number, but can you define that for folks? This is something I did years ago. Kelly Higdon and I did a podcast episode about knowing your Enough number. And really, friends, what I mean by this is how much money do we need to live a good, happy life while also keeping the business running? And so it's like a real number, not just some arbitrary number that we're trying to like hit. We're not trying to just become a, you know, $1 million business or a multi-six-figure business or whatever. So Mary Beth, as somebody that deals with money every day and deals with people with lots of different experiences around money, why is it so important for our listeners to get really clear on what that Enough number is for them?
I mean, the Enough number is what reflects, ideally, if you're doing the work, what you truly want your life to look like. There's that number. I guess there's like the dream number, the dream enough of like, okay, if I want, not if you want to retire tomorrow and like buy 5 homes, right? But like there's a reality of, you know, retiring in 10 years, being able to travel X amount or charitably inclined to give X amount, spend time, fill in the blank. Your life looks like whatever you want your life to look like on a day-to-day basis, however you want to spend it, Pilates every day. I don't know, fill in the blanks. But knowing that typically will allow you to say, okay, what do I need to spend? What will my life look like if I'm working still or if I'm not working still? That includes travel and includes like all of these things that should be lighting you up. And from there, that gives you a number that as if you're working that you need, we can say your Enough number of like income wise, what do you need that business to make so that you can fund those goals? You can save for the retirement, you can live that lifestyle. So there's this idea of like this Enough, either this gross number in your business or this net number in your business, however you'd like to look at that. And then there's the big picture Enough of like, what do I need to potentially, if I didn't want to work, what do I need to like live my life on an ongoing basis? Everybody wants this. We all talk about retiring. If you're a type A person, sometimes I'm like, will you actually retire? When will that happen? And what would we do with our times? Like we'd go crazy. But everybody wants the option. We all want the option to be able to stop working. Not that we will. And really that Enough number is what gives you the optionality of like, what do you need? What number do you need to be able to stop working? And that's your Enough number to be able to live your most fulfilled life. Like what do you need to have in investments or in the bank that you can basically then turn into an income stream for you? And that's the number. I have my own Enough number that my husband and I have planned around and talked about. I mean, I talk about it with clients. I just talked to clients a couple days ago, their number is, and they have a, I can't remember what they called it. they follow the FIRE movement. So they have a different, what they call it. But yeah, everybody kind of has their own number for what reflects your life. And that ideally, it'll give you some clarity and it should give you some peace that you have work optionality. The thing that I will also say, that is your enough number for you to live the life you're happy. I can't tell you that you won't try to move the goalpost on yourself. So
I would say that's the slippery part. That's the tricky part. But I also, like, I know you're talking about the larger scale enough number to retirement and all that stuff. But there's also the month to month, annually, year to year enough number of like, what do I need to pay? And that's the one that slides around, in my opinion.
It does. I mean, that's what I was saying. We do the year planning based on like our year, but looking 3 to 5 years, like what do you need to pay yourself on an annual basis? People don't know, but that it does slide around. But like, what is your enough number for you to fund your retirement, pay for your kids' activities, do the travel you want, do the gym or Pilates, I don't know, eat your organic food, go out to eat. What's that number? Okay, well, how do you back into it? Like, how do you get, like, account for taxes? Like, that's the number that you need to hit in your business. And sometimes that's scary AF to people, right? Like, that's just like a very intimidating number when we put down all of our wants. And like, okay, well, good luck with that. Great, that's never going to happen. But I will tell you, like, if you're playing the long game, I've seen it happen with clients. It just happens. Like, maybe it's not going to be an overnight, but I see it happen over like 5 year periods. Yeah. Right. I see it like intentional growth. Like, it's knowing that number and then working towards it, not feeling, I guess, restricted or defeated by it, but allowing yourself to know that number is scary and also freeing at the same time, yeah. I think.
I've had that same situation where it scared the heck out of people, right? But I've also had the opposite where I remember being in Oceanside at a retreat with my advisory board members and we were like, okay, how much does your business need monthly for you to run it, to operate everything? How much do you need on a personal level every month? And then they were surprised, like pleasantly surprised by the number and like, oh, I'm actually hitting that already. Like, okay, we're good. And I'm like, fantastic. So we can let go of some of that money, like negative talk and worries and fears around it. Cause you're set, you're good. So now let's make a plan to, you know, keep things moving.
But that's it. It's knowing the number. And then once you know the number too, you can make so many more informed decisions in your business too, because then you know, like, okay, well, here's my number. If I'm not there, do I want to invest additional in this area, maybe to scale so I can get there, but it'll be a step back from that number for a minute to intentionally grow? Or how am I going to allocate my resources to try to get to the number? Yeah. Whether, you know, what kind of risk am I willing to take? And it's a trade-off, but you know the number. So you feel like you're not as in the dark, right?
You feel more in control.
You have a direction. Yeah. You have a direction you're going in.
That's a good way to phrase it. And you have the direction and you have control. Mm-hmm. This was so good, Mary Beth. It's always so fun to talk to you. And I hope that I know our listeners are going to get a lot of good nuggets from this too. Tell people where they can go to learn more about your services.
Sure. You can go to allorawealth.com. That's A-L-L-O-R-A wealth.com. I also, my Substack is linked there. I write a lot about women, money, and ambition. So if you want to go get a little psychology and money, you can find my Substack. It's called Between Tables.
Awesome. We will include all those links in the show notes for everybody. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Katie.
Of course. All right. A big thanks to Mary Beth for joining me today. She is always a wealth of information and she shares so generously. In fact, our Labs members may be seeing more of Mary Beth in 2026. So stay tuned for more information on that. Speaking of Labs, I want to share this note that I received from Amy of Verity Press. Amy had this to say about Proof to Product Lab. She said, I am 100% glad that I joined Labs. As a Paper Camp alum, I knew the time spent with you would be worth every minute and every penny. Labs is perfectly organized and beneficial for any stage of business. It's fantastic to have so many elements converging in one place. Masterclasses, coaching calls, podcasts, community conversations, and resources. Labs is truly an incredible knowledge, strength, and bundle support. So thank you so much. Amy, thank you for your kind words. We're so happy to have you in the community and appreciate all of your contributions. Listeners, the doors to Proof to Product Labs are always open so that you can get the help you need when you need it most. If you are ready to stop guessing and start growing with some guidance and community support and coaching support, come join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. All right. Thanks for hanging out with me until the end of the episode today. I will be back soon with another new one.